to Netzpolitik TV podcast. My name is Markus Beckedahl, and my guest today is David Reed. You're with the MIT Media Lab. What is the MIT Media Lab?
Okay, the MIT Media Lab is a research lab, interdisciplinary research lab in Cambridge, Massachusetts, and it works on a whole variety of things related to technologies for human expression. My focus there is on communications technology. I run a group called Viral Communications, which is looking at the future of communications technology.
Oh, on Wikipedia, you are called as the founder of the end-to-end principle. Can you describe what is meant by this name?
Yeah, the end-to-end principle, the original name for it was the end-to-end argument, and it came from the original work on the internet and other systems. The basic idea is that if you have a function or a goal you're trying to achieve, if possible, the original argument was many functions and goals can't be completely solved in the network or in the lower level of the system. And if you can't solve it completely in the lower level of the network, then you should try to solve it at the edges without involving the lower level. So sometimes that's been shortened to the idea that you should always try to do implement every function or capability only at the edges. The original argument is a little bit more subtle than that. But the basic idea was, if you look at functions like providing security, providing performance, providing reliability, oftentimes network builders or designers would try to say, oh, we can make implemented a certain way, we can provide maximum performance or maximum security or maximum reliability. And in the early days of the internet, the discussions would always be, but are you really providing what users want? And that's what users mean by reliability or performance. And the answer is almost always no, that the network itself is a small part of the problem. And what we often did in that case is said, then why are we trying so hard to do it in the network? Why don't we do it at the edges? So that was the original network argument. Basically, it informed almost every aspect of the internet design, because what it was a very strong argument for eliminating extra stuff from being in the network. And it's why the internet was designed the way it was, with a very simple core and lots of stuff at the edges.
It looks now that it was a very good decision.
I think all those decisions were very good decisions. In fact, we named that argument after we'd been applying it many times. And the reason we named it was that actually my advisor, I was a graduate student when I was working on the internet, and my advisor, Professor Jerome Saltzer, who is the first name on the original paper, said, you've been making these arguments, and they're very unusual. He said, do you know that they're unusual? Because the usual argument for designing a system is to add functions into the system, and you're making an argument to remove functions from the system. You know, that's an unusual design principle for a system. And in particular, it's a principled argument and it's been demonstrated to work. It's very rare that you can't find a way to solve the problem by having the edges do the problem. As we've seen, for example, most recently with peer-to-peer file distribution, it used to be thought that you had to do file distribution in a very centralized way, and in fact you can get much more efficient file distribution by taking advantage of all the resources at the edge and having them all cooperate to do a better job than you could do if you centralized it.
You recently talked about net neutrality. What does it mean, the debate, okay, and what does it mean for the end-to-end argument?
Well, net neutrality is a term that I didn't choose, and I've been involved in the debate. The basic idea is that the owner of the network, or in many cases, the owner of the access network, the link that gets you to other parts of the internet, should not interfere with the communications going through it in some way, either looking at it or changing it or blocking it. In the United States, the network neutrality argument has sort of turned into an argument about what kind of legislation should be passed in order to make that against the law. And there's a lot of debate since the United States doesn't like regulation, there's been a lot of debate as to whether that should be a law. It was clearly a result of the end-to-end argument that the internet doesn't play with packets and so forth. And one could argue, and the reason the end-to-end argument applies here, is that the end-to-end argument has demonstrated, or the results of the end-to-end argument have not only been that the network doesn't get involved with packets, but also that a great deal of innovation has happened, because there's no function, nothing you have to change about the network to do something different. And so in many ways, the rapidity and of innovation and evolution of the internet, which kind of builds on this idea that the network doesn't do very much other than carry packets, is now viewed as an economic benefit. And therefore, it's a lot stronger argument than just, say, the argument that, you know, it's bad to read packets or it's bad to interfere with packets from a moral point of view. So the end-to-end argument sort of says there's also an economic benefit as well as a moral benefit to doing this. And the synergy of an economic and a moral benefit, it seems to me, is something that the internet has achieved, whereas traditional other kinds of communication networks, like the cable TV distribution network or the telephone network, have not necessarily achieved, because they tried to build functions into those networks, which made them hard to change.
In the recently debate, you were also talking about deep packet inspections.
Right. Deep packet inspection is a particularly strong form of having the network or a piece of the network interfere with your communications. And it's become technologically inexpensive to inspect packets as they flow by, and even derive information and change packets as they go by. And I'm very concerned about that for lots of reasons, both for again, moral and political reasons, but also the same argument that applies about keeping the network flexible, the argument of flexibility, also applies to deep packet inspection. If we start to depend on deep packet inspection to implement certain functions, then it will be very hard to change the network to incorporate new applications, because they'll have to deal with the deep packet inspection that's going on, or maybe not even be able to carry the traffic and so forth. And so there's an argument against deep packet inspection that has nothing to do with the privacy and political and moral arguments. There's an argument, an economic argument as well, and I think we need to pay attention to both the economic arguments, which are very strong, and the moral and political arguments, which are different. And fortunately, they're all going in the same direction, I believe, as opposed to being a trade-off.
And my blog is a political blog, so what are the political or moral arguments against the packet inspection?
Well, I think the political and moral arguments are that and we've had a number of discussions, but the particular political and moral arguments are that someone who's providing you a piece of a communication service should not thereby acquire, you know, great power over you as a user, just because they're providing a small part of your life, especially if you don't agree to it. Communications networks tend to be somewhat more centralized, centrally controlled. In the political sphere, they're often regulated and mandated to perform certain functions by government, and and also may perform those functions for commercial needs. And all of those pressures, if allowed to continue, will weaken the freedom and privacy of the end users in either small ways or very big ways, depending on how much they're allowed to get away with.
Will it be used? Is it still?
It is being used. That's not even will it. There are already trials of, deep packet inspection is part of a technology that's been used supposedly to manage congestion in access networks. Comcast in the United States was discovered to be using a deep packet inspection based technique to detect BitTorrent downloads and then basically forge packets that interfered with those downloads at various times of day. And there is an argument that Comcast, which also provides video services that compete with the downloads that are going over BitTorrent, is not only doing this to manage congestion, but also to manage competition and to decide what content people see. It's also being used as solutions to advertising targeting technologies that put the internet carrier, the folks who just carry your packets, in charge of targeting ads, advertising to you. And two companies that provide such technology, Nebuad and Form, are already running trials in conjunction with large commercial access providers. Charter Communications, which is a large cable company in the United States, nationwide cable company, has announced that it's working with Nebuad to use deep packet inspection to target ads. And British Telecom in the UK has been working with Form to trial Form technology on its, which is similar ad targeting. Both of them use deep packet inspection to see what web pages you're using, and then they modify the web pages coming back to you by modifying the packets to make sure that you see ads that they want you to see. So these are actually in use today, at least in trials, and Charter's announced that it's going to be rolling it out nationwide very soon.
Are you optimistic or pessimistic for the future of these technologies and how they affect privacy?
I'm pretty pessimistic. I'm not as pessimistic as Larry Lessig is known to be about copyright, but I'm pretty pessimistic that they will be stopped unless there's a fairly strong public reaction to their use, because the technology is fairly inexpensive and it's somewhat hard to discover that the technology is being used. And as some of my colleagues have said, some users actually like the results of these technologies or are indifferent to the results, not seeing that potentially the technologies are part of a creeping process that will then seek other applications, such as behavioral targeting, not for advertising, but for example, deciding, you know, who's a risky member of society or whatever.
Okay, thank you very much
for
the interview.
Good, thank you.